Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's that love that's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
Alright, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascists.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Thank you for joining us once again.
Yes, thank you. Welcome back.
I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul, and this is West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast. And you can reach us at email, Twitter, Facebook, all those things.
They know where to find us.
Yes. Oh, we had a great couple of weeks of baseball, didn't we? It was a lot of fun. We had record home runs. We had epic pitching, fantastic fielding, poor umpiring, ejections, bat flips, hat throwing, geographic reshuffling. But before we get into that, I have a heartfelt congratulations to give to the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Ooh, huh?
The Pirates, yes, for being the only National League Central team not to lose a wild card series.
Wow. Yes. That is true.
It is true.
You credit where credit's due.
We jest, you know, we joked about all of the flyover states last time.
Indeed.
And you know, they all lost, including both the the AL Central teams as well. They all lost more or less with a whimper rather than a bang. It was disappointing, especially so for the fans of the Minnesota Twins.
Ouch. Yeah, Yankees fans can complain, but really the Twins fans have it the worst.
Yeah, I believe so too. Now it's 18 games in a row that they have lost. This streak is dating back all the way to October of 2004. So we're talking.
I award you no points.
Yeah, no points for second place here. The Twins. I found a fantastic article on FanGraphs, and I couldn't not bring this up because it was truly amazing as regards to this losing streak over 16 years, 18 games.
Brutal.
The odds of which are astronomical. And this FanGraph article broke it down where they looked at the highest win probability that the Twins have had in each of those losses. They had at one point been favored to win during the game, and then of course something happened and they lost.
I think actually nothing happened and then they lost except for Nelson Cruz's bat, but you know, one man can't
carry a team. And that was only part of it, but we're talking, it's not just been, they lost several against the A's, they lost several against the Yankees,
right.
It's sometimes that meltdown happened in the fourth inning. Sometimes that meltdown happened in the ninth inning. The point is they added up all of these numbers to come up with the number, the likelihood of a team losing 18 games in a row in the manner in which they did. Like 69 billion 52 million 227,309 to 1 against.
Oh, man.
So 69 billion with a B to 1, losing 18 in a row. You know what the odds are if you flip a coin that it would come up the same way, all heads, every single time?
It's 50-50, right?
That number... Well, a 50-50 each time.
Oh, right. But to get a consecutive string,
but take that to the 18th power, consecutively getting ahead every single time is only a mere 262,144 to one against. So we're talking, this is far more unlikely than flipping a coin 18 times in a row and having it have come up the same result every time.
So is that the Ignoble Award? I don't understand.
No, it's not. We have something else for the Ignoble Award, but this was a very close. But wow. it was something that was it had to be said. It had to be put out there to everyone who's a fan of just crazy trivia. 69 billion to one. That would be quite the payoff if I could. If I could bet a dollar that would happen, I'd be a very rich man.
If the Twins make it to the postseason next season, are you betting against them just because? Or are they due? And or could you have said that they were due this season?
Well,
the season before that.
They've been due. They were definitely due.
Is it a sure bet to bet against them?
I don't know. I think it begs the question, are the Twins a cursed franchise at this point? And if so, what was the event that cursed them? These are the things that we need to know. Hey, if you're from Minnesota, if you're a Minnesota Twins fans, please write into the show. Let us know what you think, because I'm generally curious. Is the Twins a cursed team? Is it something like the curse of the Bambino, the curse of the Billy Goat? These are the things that we strive to find out here at West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast. So, let us know. You know the email or Twitter, anywhere that
the Twins,
you can leave us a comment.
Yeah. Where did they come from? Do you know the history of the team? The Twins, they were the Senators before?
Not right off the top of my head. I don't know the full history of the Twins. I mean, this is something that I can certainly research and everything. Please forgive me. I'm a Giants fan, and I have been my whole life. Never been to Minnesota, so I don't know too much about the team.
Yeah, it must be some sort of old Washington Senators or Nationals, whatever the hell.
Well, they've won the World Series, come close to winning the World Series anyway.
And the Twins have won, fewer than 30 years ago.
Yeah, no, this.
So it's not like their curse has been going on.
No, this is recent.
The 60s or
something. This is recent. This streak started in October 6th, 2004. It was the first of these 18 losses.
It's a really sad curse. I mean, if you're cursing, you just always lose, like the Cubs. Okay, fine. But if you're making it to the postseason consistently and losing.
Like, well, the Red Sox?
Or the Dodgers, I guess, for that matter. Jeez.
Nothing for you!
But this is the year. And, of course, it'll be with an asterisk from all the haters out there. But October is October.
October is October.
And ask any Giants fan. Doesn't matter how you get there.
Nope.
Matters how you finish. So, this season counts as much or, if not more so, than 2017 or 2019 in terms of Astros stats, for that matter.
Are we going to get a rematch of 2017?
You know, that's what people want to see, I think. I don't know why.
It would be compelling to see Joe Kelly face the Astros in the postseason. You see sad faces across the dugouts.
I guess you're right. We would use Joe Kelly as an enforcer, as in hockey. You know, you have one guy that's like 6'8", that just comes in.
So he's going to come fight in game one and Bean Bregman, take him out of the game, and then we won't see Joe Kelly again for the rest of the series?
Bean Altuve, honestly, get Correa first.
Correa,
that guy. You know, Bregman, at least he's kept his mouth shut after they all put their foot in their mouths a few months ago. You know, Correa is the only one that's still chirping. So, yeah, to hell with all of them, off with all their heads. But let's do Correa first, you know, so they can all watch. Or maybe Correa last, so he has to watch everybody else. I don't know. This is getting really dark. But no, no. To answer your question, no. The Astros cannot meet the Rays. They can't meet them. There's just no way. They're pitching. They're starting pitchers. They're relief pitchers. Not even close.
The Rays pitching is too strong for the Astros. This last DS series with the A's is quite a laser show.
You know,
in Dodger Stadium.
Oh, yeah, the balls are flying out of Dodger Stadium. I wish we could have played that. I wish the Dodgers could have played that.
I know. It was the weirdest thing. You know, I turned into game one of the ALDS, you know, and I managed to catch the very top of the broadcast, and there's a picture of a hazy L.A. freeway, and it says, oh, yes, we're in Los Angeles. They switched to a picture of the Hollywood sign. Yes, we're in Hollywood. And this is Dodger Stadium for the A's and Astros and the ALDS. And it's just like there's something about that that just doesn't seem right.
It's gross.
It was very strange. And then, you know, I was listening to the Yankees and the Rays on the radio, and every time they would say from San Diego, and then they'd be talking about the Yankees. I'm like, what?
It's very strange.
It threw me off every single time, and it's just, I don't know, it's just very strange.
Yeah, it's almost like you're getting cheated on. You know, when I'm watching those A's Astros game and they're playing at Dodger Stadium, it's like this weird gross feeling, and like, you don't belong here, how dare you sully this field. Not the A's, the A's are fine, but the Astros.
Well, you know, I was thinking about it during that series, that both of these teams have a history in that stadium in the postseason.
Very true.
And one team was a lot better history than the other.
Well,
I mean, we're
yeah, well, yeah, obviously. I mean, if you cheat your way there, sure.
But how are they relaying the science in Dodger Stadium?
No, they never should have won game four, game five. You already know this. There never should have been a game seven, obviously. This is all common knowledge now. So, Yu Darvish imploding notwithstanding. It never should have.
What about game one and two?
Yeah, it's fine. You know, they won one. It's all right. No big deal. And anyway, if they're relaying signs at home, I think they could figure out a way to do it from the stands or from center field or from the bullpen. Look, I don't know. I don't know all the ins and outs. And this is what Rob Manfred should have figured out. This isn't my job. My job is just to report the facts and or complain about the facts, I guess I should say. But you are right. The Astros and A's each had 12 home runs in that series. Yes. I believe that is a record.
It is a record. 24 home runs in the ALDS. The previous record was 22, and that was set in 1995. And that was the Mariners and Yankees.
Yeah, Jay Buhner, Ken Griffey Jr., Edgar Martinez.
That was quite the team.
It was a hell of a team.
And on the other side, it had Derek Jeter and A-Rod and...
Wait, wasn't A-Rod still in the Mariners then?
Was he? Maybe. Maybe he was. So. I don't know. He was involved in that series, regardless of where...
but it's Griffey sliding into home, right? That's the... the 95 ALDS.
I think so, yeah. That's the one that they thought they were going to actually be able to go all the way, but it wasn't to be.
But the apparently the most home runs in postseason series is what, 26?
26. That was...
most in any postseason series.
Most in any postseason. So it could have been ALCS, two games.
2008, yeah. ALCS, Tampa Bay, Boston. I know people, for some reason, maybe it's some sick, morbid curiosity to see the Dodgers play the Astros. And maybe even just for my own psyche, that would be fine because the Dodgers would handle them easily. But I just don't want the Trash Heroes to even win a pennant. You know, I know it's only an American League pennant, so it's not the same. It doesn't count as much. But it's still, you know, for them, it's still a pennant. And they don't need any more flags flying in that horrible orange juice stadium. So no, and lucky for me, the Rays are just way better, and as we've seen, the pitching wins games. That's just It's what it comes down to. You know, it's what the A's couldn't get done, and it's what the Dodgers masterfully got done, as well as the Braves, for that matter. Wow, the Braves might give the Dodgers a little bit of trouble, but, I mean, you know, stacked player to player, Braves can't really hold a candle to the Dodgers. But I will say, you know, the Braves NLDS and wildcard was
really pretty stellar.
Franchise historic, yeah.
Well, I think not even, it goes beyond just historic for the franchise. This is historic going back more than 100 years.
Yeah, since before the live ball era.
The last time that a team had as low an ERA as the Braves pitching staff does through five games was 1919. Of course, that was the Cincinnati Reds and the infamous Chicago White Sox series.
Black Sox, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but in terms of live ball era, yeah, I guess it's the lowest.
It is.
Because not even that that trio of Smoltz, Madden, Maddox, and Glavin could top that.
Yeah, and those were some good pitchers.
Yeah. The lowest postseason ERA ever recorded by any of those Maddox, Glavin, Smoltz teams back in the glory years was 1.89 by the 96 Braves. Of course, the 2020 Braves put up a 0.92 collective ERA.
It's quite impressive.
It's pretty insane. The Braves team has pitched 49 innings in this postseason over five games. Game one, 13 innings, 13 zeros. Game two, 9 innings, 9 zeros. Game three, 9 innings, 6 zeros. But then the rest, yeah, 9 for 9, 9 for 9. It's pretty amazing. 49 innings, 46 donuts served.
Yeah.
So Fried, Anderson, Kyle Wright, you know, a bunch of pretty solid relievers, and maybe an anemic opposing team.
Maybe.
Marks a pretty damn and historic postseason
run. But
the
Marlins had been playing really well up to that point, and they just couldn't get across the plate.
Yeah, and that's with Acuna only getting like two hits in the entire series. I mean, one of them was a home run.
If you don't give up any runs, it's very hard to lose.
Yeah.
This is the takeaway. You don't give up any runs, you win.
Yeah. Yeah, the 2020 Braves are now the only team ever to have two separate streaks of back-to-back shutouts in the same postseason.
Oh, good. Let's hope. Here's to hoping that trend continues into the NLCS here.
What?
Well, they're going to be against the Dodgers, right? I would personally like to see more shutouts thrown by Braves pitching.
How do you sleep at night?
Very well, thank you very much.
Yes, the Braves are finally in the NLCS for the first time in 19 years since Randy Johnson and Tom Glavine duked it out in the 01 NLCS. That's a big gap.
It is a big gap.
I think one of my favorite postseason moments ever was that game five of the NLDS 2013 Dodgers against the Braves. And as the eighth inning, Juan Uribe takes a knee, hits that home run where he like literally drops to one knee, pulls it. It was basically the closest thing to a Carlton Fisk moment I've ever had as a Dodger fan. And I was at the Kiz's house, and I literally fell off the couch. Like, I was on the floor. I couldn't believe it. It was maybe one of the most... It's weird because it was the eighth inning, and it was just the DS, but the amount of pure and unadulterated joy and maybe seven or eight beers fueled my euphoria. It was one of the greatest moments. I still remember it. So that was the last time, I think, Dodgers and the Braves matched up. Of course, the Dodgers won that. Didn't work out so well after that, but the Braves arguably are a better team now than they were back then, so they should give the Dodgers some problems. But again, I mean, position to position, pitcher to pitcher.
As long as it's a competitive series, you know, if neither team just rolls over and dies, I think it'll be a lot of fun. I think we're going to see certainly the greatest lineup in baseball against what's looking to be the best pitching staff in baseball, at least are performing so this postseason.
The Dodgers and the Rays have the best pitching staffs, which is why I'm slating both of them.
Yeah, even World with Series. The question mark at the closer position for the Dodgers here.
Well, you know, and we talked about this before last time, in fact, because I was curious to see if the Dodgers would be just going de facto Kenley for save opportunities. And they did show, you know, Trinan coming in the eighth, Kenley in the ninth, and Brusdar Graterol obviously throwing easy 100, which is always nice to see, and sometimes what you want in the ninth. And even against a team like the Slam Diego, who did give us some problems and did give Brusdar some problems, or at least a problem until Bellinger corrected that right quick. It's
robbery. Straight up.
To change the closer in the middle of a postseason, even if he's been struggling a little bit, might weigh more heavy and might have more detrimental effects mentally on the team than just leaving him in, and if he gets in trouble, we'll take him out. I don't know, man. This is why I'm glad I'm not the manager, because whatever Dave Roberts does, he's going to get heat for it.
Well, of course, that'll happen, unless, of course, they win, and then it doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, hopefully every game's a blowout, so we don't even need Kenley. I know, you can't
necessarily hope for that. These look to be probably some really good, tight games. I don't think we're going to see very many blowouts.
Let's hope so. Now, let's look at the best thing you saw this season, the worst thing you saw this postseason, I should say.
The postseason. I was going to say.
And the funniest moment so far. What's the best thing you've
seen? The best thing that I saw, I would have to give it to the catch made out in center field by Bellinger. You just mentioned this.
You stole
play.
Mine. That's mine.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any rule about having the same moment, but it was...
I appreciate your objectivity.
It was an impressive moment. It was an amazing catch. It was... It changed the tenor of that game. That home run would have been a two-run home run. Yeah. It would have put the...
Lead change.
It would have put the Padres ahead for the first time that game, for the first time that series. It would have changed the tone of the game. And we don't know necessarily if it would have changed the outcome. But
definitely would have deflated the sales of the Dodgers, certainly.
And if the Padres would have gone on to win that game, we may have gone five games for this series. You know, it's possible that anything could have happened if Bellinger doesn't make that spectacular catch that was a foot and a half over the top of the wall.
That was a home run, and that
was an easy home run in almost every other park
by a guy who doesn't even play center field every day.
Right.
I mean,
which made it even more impressive that
he had it the whole way.
Oh, and he knew that he had it the whole way. It was just an impressive play. I think that was the best thing that I saw this postseason.
Yeah, they even joked about it the next day. They were laughing about it. You know, Bellinger said, "Oh, I'd be so mad if you caught that." You know, because it's true, man.
Yeah,
he hit it to the deepest part of really one of the worst parks to hit in. I mean, it was. Globe Life is no fun for home run hitters.
It's a big park.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. And what's great to see is that the camaraderie and the sportsmanship were there, because you know they're out on the field, batting practice. I saw Tatis talking with Kershaw and joking with Bellinger about that play.
Right.
And I think there's no hard feelings, and everyone respects guys who play the game the right way. It's great to see that culture is still alive and well, especially between two division rivals.
Correct. All right, so if you're going to steal that, I guess I'll go a very close second, which would be Justin Turner recording his 64th postseason hit, giving him the Dodgers franchise all-time lead.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
While at the same time, Will Smith goes 5-for-6 and sets a Dodgers franchise record for most hits in a single postseason game. After, I think, going like 1-for-20-something Will Smith, and he just went off. That was great. It's nice to see. So, yeah, give it to Belly and or Justin Turner. I like how they're both Dodgers. Now, what was the worst thing you saw?
The worst thing that I saw? I would say probably just the I had to give it to the Cincinnati Reds.
Ouch.
For just falling absolutely flat.
That's really sad.
Absolutely
flat. I was rooting for him, man. I was.
You know, I root, you know, in all these series that I get to watch that I don't necessarily am a fan of either of the teams. I want to see some good baseball. I want to see some entertaining competitive ball, and just to see a team just come out and just have no life in the bats. There was very little bounce in the steps going out, and it was just like it was the epitome of choke. They got there, and then they fought hard to get there, and they come out and nothing, and they just get blown away.
A whimper. It seemed like they're the kind of team that should have excelled in the postseason because they probably shouldn't have been there. But at the same time, they did belong to be there because they did belong there because they really finished strong in the regular season. I thought that that would be enough motivation for them to...
You would think.
Yeah, at least get through the first round. At least put one run across.
Put one run across. I mean, yeah.
Brutal. Is Bauer going to stay in Cincinnati or is he heading to California? Giants should make a move if they could. I mean, obviously, you know, I wouldn't mind
seeing it. It'd be great to have that kind of vocal personality.
He grew up a Dodger fan, though, so I don't know if he's going to want to wear black and orange.
So did Romo.
Yeah, I know, that's true.
And you know, there's been a number of Giants that grew up in Los Angeles. I mean, are color announcer on TV, Mike Kruko, grew up a Dodger fan.
Really?
Yeah. You know, then there's, of course, on the flip side, Vince Scully famously grew up a Giants
fan.
Well,
that was New York.
And he was very young and
didn't know better. You know, he was very young.
He got hired by the other team, so what are you going to do?
He was very young. Give him a break. I'm not going to pile on the Reds, so I got to say, you know, Rick Renteria managing that White Sox team, and I guess really just the bullpen. You know, it seemed like, and I'm not the first person to have said this, but like he looked at someone like Kevin Cash of the Rays or even Dave Roberts and was like, oh, okay, I'm going to emulate that. I'm just going to pull out pitchers. I mean, I guess the Padres were even worse, but we'll get to them later. But he didn't seem to know what he was doing during that wild card series. Renteria, in terms of coaching, now, you know, obviously I'm probably wrong because he's a professional and I'm a slob, but it really sure seemed like he was just trying to throw anything at the wall and to see if something would stick, you know, in terms of pulling out pitchers, putting in guys when it was really strange to watch. Now, I'm happy for the A's, but it was a weird, it just did not seem like he knew what he was doing, or maybe he was nervous. You know, Bob Melvin, on the other hand, you know, you might be able to say he made mistakes because they, of course, you know, or, you know, they won. But in game two of that series, he called in Liam Hendricks to get six outs on a 5-run lead, which is a huge gamble. You know, he ended up throwing 49 pitches, basically rendering him unusable the next day. Somehow, of course, Hendricks did come back to close out game three. But, you know, sometimes a gamble works, and it just seemed like Renteria's gamble. I mean, maybe it's just his gambles all just didn't work, and it made him look bad. But it also just sort of seemed like there was no rhyme or reason to what he was doing.
It's possible. I don't know. I mean, we know that the rules change when you get to the postseason. It's a totally different animal, and most of the managers will talk about that. It's totally different, and you know, perhaps he was trying to emulate other managers that he's seen, but the trouble with that is you can't be a Dave Roberts if you're not a Dave Roberts. Yeah. You can't be a Bruce Bochy if you're not Bruce Bochy. You have to be your own man. I mean, you can take hints from others, but you have to be willing to trust your knowledge, your gut, and things like that. What got you there is good. You still need to trust that, but you need to be far more vigilant in the postseason, just because things are going to happen really quick, and every single pitch absolutely matters when you get to the postseason because they're so limited. If you've got to win two games, you've only got three games in which to do it. That's 18 outs or 18 innings that you have to be 100% on top of it. And mistakes are bound to happen. And you've got to take risks that you wouldn't in the regular season. And this regular season, it was like a mini postseason. The whole season was like a pennant race. It was.
Yeah.
So you would think that some of that would translate, but.
Yeah, and you could even make the same argument that Aaron Boone had kind of the same. You know, he tried to do the same thing when he brought in Davey Garcia to be the opener. Right. And, you know, that's not the Yankees' deal. I mean, when you deviate in the postseason, especially, it's like, you know, what are you doing?
All right. Well, then there was in Game 5 in San Diego, Yankees Rays. The Rays brought in their closer in a high leverage situation in the third inning to get a couple outs. He did. He threw two pitches, got two outs, and that was it. And they went on to cruise a bullpen victory.
Oh, yeah.
for Game 5. And that gamble worked.
Slightly, because Glasnow back in on short rest, and he pitched like 3 1/3, which is amazing.
Sure. But, you know, using your closer that early in the game, you know, then when it comes to those last three outs of the game, which are arguably the hardest to get, you don't have that guy.
Yeah.
But
Kevin Cash knows his team, and Aaron Boone, maybe it wasn't even conscious, but it almost seemed like he was trying to do his best Kevin Cash impression, along with Renteria. I'm just going to give it to Renteria, though, but anyway.
All right.
But you're right, though, man. Like, the Rays pitching staff closing that out. Actually, Pete Fairbanks was talking post-game after that, you know, the clinch, and I really love what he said.
We're trying to advance, you know? We don't really care when, where. I'll throw till my arm falls off. Nick will throw till his arm falls off. Diego will throw till his arm falls off. We're trying to...
Yeah, that's great. I love that.
I hope we don't have too many arms falling off this postseason. But, it's great.
It's that, they're all on the same page, it seems like. The Rays pitching staff. Like, they're all, like, one guy, it almost seems like. Different arms of the same beast. It's going to be tough, man. I mean, the only other team that with a better bullpen would be the A's, who are now gone. And then in the National League side, the Dodgers, who hopefully they'll meet in the World Series. It is weird, though, how Melvin did bring Hendricks back, you know, when the A's do have the best bullpen in baseball. And he kept bringing Hendricks back. I mean, it worked. But,
he was the horse that he was going to...
Well, that's postseason baseball, I guess.
Ride or died,
Yeah.
You're going to ride the hot hand until he's not hot, and hopefully it's not too late by the time you pull him.
Now, what was the funniest moment? Because this is easy for me.
I think I might know what it is, because I think it might be the same for me. I think it was the reaction after the aforementioned Bellinger catch.
No, that was the best thing I saw.
It was the reaction, the pitcher's reaction. He yelled, he grabbed his hat, and he threw it.
Losing his mind in celebratory revelry, much to the chagrin of one Manny Machado.
Oh, well, sure, if you're going to celebrate at the plate after you hit that ball... the guy on the mound has every right to celebrate when that hit is taken away
100%
by some sort of spectacular miracle angels in the outfield style catch over the wall. It was pretty powerful emotion. I'd love to see the emotion on the field. I think it just makes it so much more fun.
100%.
And that was, I think that was the funniest thing, because I don't think I've ever seen... a pitcher have such a visceral reaction to it. I mean, I've seen like some celebratory arms raised. Yeah, good job. Way to go. Fist bumps.
Yeah, yeah.
But to like take your hat off and to chuck it into the dugout, that was fantastic.
It was pretty cool. And then Manny was like, you know, I'll see you soon, you know. And then he did. He solved the very next
next
at bat, and he weakly grounded out to the pitcher though. So maybe he was actually trying to hit the pitcher. Not sure, but he did not make good on his promise. Kind of like he didn't make good on this other promise. Although the Dodgers still haven't won yet.
I'll
leave that for another time. Now the funniest moment that I saw happened just recently, in fact. I mean, I guess it's not funny if you're a Yankees fan. but it came in the bottom of the fifth with the Yankees up 1-0. And Gerrit Cole just throwing BBs, you know. Gerrit Cole looking like the $300-400 million man, whatever the hell he is.
That they paid him to be.
Yeah. He was, you know, he made good, seemed like. But
the Yankees lost not because of Gerrit Cole.
No. Yeah. So that inning, 1-0 count, or Yankees are up 1-0. Austin Meadows smashes that first pitch and sends it right over the right field wall. But Aaron Judge is tracking it, right? And he attempts to jump only to smash his head on the like sunken in Delta Pepsi advertisement that's out there. I guarantee the Yankees fans will never buy a Pepsi ever again. Have you seen that? It's like, I don't know if it's the only part of that wall and Aaron Judge is super tall, but like, so I guess it could have been worse if he was shorter. But yeah, he goes to jump and he doesn't realize that there's like a little that ad is sunken in, I guess. I don't know. It does seem kind of dangerous. Maybe he'll complain and maybe they'll fix it after this season.
Maybe they will. I know that there was
that was hilarious though, because that must have hurt.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
And it was just super embarrassing, a la, you know, Jose Canseco home run.
Well, I don't know if it's quite that bad.
It looked pretty bad.
I mean, it wasn't the ball hitting him in the head.
Yeah, but it was him hitting the wall. Like, it looked pretty bad. It was pretty funny, though.
Yeah.
Again, I'm sure their Delta is not going to be sponsoring the Yankees anytime soon.
Delta or Pepsi?
It was like a Delta/Pepsi ad, right? I don't know. Go back and watch it. It was really strange.
Review that highlight, yeah.
Pretty strange. Now, I was going to give the ignoble award to Jace Tingler, but we're not going to. But speaking of
Jace Tingler,
why,
for arguing balls and strikes and getting ejected out of game two? There?
No, that's fine. Although that's not fine. You know, it's just like, chill out, bro. Just go back to shooting porn or whatever you're doing with that name. On Thursday night's game, which saw their season come to an end, Jace Tingler used 11 different pitchers. Was it an extra inning game? No! A 9-inning game. Even for Dave Roberts, that's crazy. Okay. Which his team, of course, lost by 9 runs and was never closer than 5 runs from being behind after the 4th inning. The last time the Padres went to the World Series, they used 10 pitchers to cover the entire postseason over 3 rounds. Meanwhile, in 2020, Jace Tingler just used 11 pitchers in one night in a 9-run loss. I don't know. MLB, see, guys like this are ruining the game because now MLB is going to step in and be like, oh, no, now we got to put out a new rule, which, I mean, yeah, I guess they have to. I mean, but we shouldn't have even have to have that because maybe in some weird scenario, you might need to do that. But when you're losing by 9 runs, I mean, come on, man.
They're just trying to stop the bleeding.
Yeah, until this postseason, only 2 teams in history had ever used 9 pitchers in any 9-inning postseason game, and both of them, unsurprisingly, were the Rays, 6 years apart, 2013-2019. Then the Padres come in this year and use 9-plus pitchers 4 times in their last 5 games. They used 8 in another one, but, you know, the madness gave the Padres pitchers an average of 7 outs per start. 7 outs per start. Shame.
Yeah, that's not...
Shame! Shame.
Talking about speeding up the game.
2 1/3 innings.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a pitch clock, mound visits,
mound visit limits.
Starting a guy on second in the
they got to stay in
innings,
for 3 batters,
3 batter minimum. None of that addresses Tingler's just fun and Lever fancy free way of managing. Yeah. And then he got kicked out because that guy's annoying. Get rid of Tingler. Padres, you might actually be doing pretty good if you just got rid of him.
I don't know. He did a decent job. He got farther than the previous several managers of the Padres.
Yeah, well, they also have Machado, relatively healthy Hosmer. Will Myers decided to wake up from his 7-year coma, and of course, Fernando Tatis Jr., the West Coast Ronald Acuna, and even then, they still couldn't get it done. And it's a lot of that maybe has to do with Clevinger and some bad luck. But the writing was kind of on the wall with that guy. I don't know why people were super optimistic about Clev.
Well, I think they were just excited that he thought that he could pitch. And it was very valiant of him to go out and try, but I don't know if it helped the team at all.
I'll subtract one pitcher from the Tingler fiasco because, Clevinger's elbow fell off or something. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Or he has no more cartilage left. Not really sure.
Something. It seems like a strange injury, but I'm sure we'll find out more about it during the offseason. I'm sure it'll have ramifications in the signing of free agent pitchers during this year's hot stove.
Now, in that same vein, with the Dodgers sweeping and then sweeping again, it's hard for me not to think of those 2007 Rockies that started off the exact same way, only to get swept in the World Series.
Yeah, well, the Sox. I believe the 2012 Tigers also had this problem.
Now, right. Now, there were more days off back then, and one can make the argument that too many days off is bad for baseball players, especially when they're used to playing every day. So when you sweep with days off in between and stuff, it's not going to be good. So hopefully this won't be a problem for the Dodgers, seeing as, tomorrow will mark 4 weeks, Monday that is, since the last time the Dodgers failed to score at least 3 runs in a game, which, honestly, as much as I hate to admit, is a far cry from what they've been doing in the last few postseasons, where it seems like they can't really string runs together. Right. Of course, the Dodgers led MLB in home runs again, but it's nice to see that they only have really 2 in this entire postseason, I believe. Is it 2? Maybe 3. I think it's just 2, though. So all of our runs have come from baseball.
Base hits.
Yeah. Just stringing runs together. You saw that double steal that Mookie orchestrated the other day, which was amazing. And then him and Corey Seager, they both came home to score. That's baseball. You know, and it's nice to see us at Globe Life Park, the Dodgers, that is, not trying just to sell out and rely on the home run. So this is a very good sign to see for the Dodgers, seeing as how, we haven't lost a game since September 23rd, 2.5 weeks ago. Obviously the Dodgers are consistently putting up runs, and controlling the strike zone is definitely playing a huge part in their offensive success. This same time last year, the Dodgers only put up 20 walks in the entire 5-game series in the NLDS, which they've already matched this year in 3 games, as well as equaling their 20 total singles from last postseason as well. And we haven't even started the championship series, so that's a good sign.
Right.
And the Braves bullpen is not nearly as good as the Dodgers, so.
Well, no, but they have given up less runs this postseason than
the Dodgers are playing the Marlins. Dodgers are playing one of the best offenses in the National League in San Diego. I don't think that
the Braves are going to be pushovers. I think you're not. I don't think there's going to be a sweep in that series. I think that we're going to go at least 6 games.
Okay.
at least 6 games. I still think that the Dodgers are going to win the series, much to my chagrin, but I have more hope given the recent success of the Braves pitching staff might be able to stifle some of the Dodgers' power.
Now, out of all the other National League teams, which team would you have preferred to see going up against the Dodgers, and or is it the Braves? Who could match them the best?
Well, it's so hard to say, just because the Dodgers had the best record, given our relatively small sample size of a season. They were clearly the best team, but they were also playing teams in their division, and the AL West, which, with the exception of the A's during the regular season, failed to finish above 500. I think that probably, Braves are probably the best case in the National League to really challenge the Dodgers. So. And it'll be very interesting. I think that the fact that these teams have not played during the regular season adds a lot of intrigue to really what happens. We're going to see who really is better team.
Definitely. It is nice to see three out of the four teams in the postseason as arguably the best teams to have made it to advance. You know,
right.
You don't always see that every year. Now, if you obviously can try to make it, are they doing fans? They're doing like 14,000 fans for the CS, or is it just the World Series?
I don't know about the CS, but I know that the World Series, however many they're going to be letting into,
I think it's 14,000.
The stadium, is it 14,000?
Yeah.
Well, they were sold out as of,
I'm sure.
I guess it was,
as soon as the
October 4th, yeah, or whatever it was. They were totally sold out.
Now, if you're in the LA area, the Dodgers are hosting viewing parties for the NLCS against the Braves in the parking lot. They will have a couple 60-foot screens in two sections of the cavernous parking lots at Dodger Stadium, with audio broadcast through an FM radio transmitter. No concessions, and fans are allowed to bring their own food and non-alcoholic beverages. Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, you can't endorse the if you're going to be sitting in your car and then driving home afterwards, you can't necessarily endorse the consumption, right, of alcoholic beverages.
That, whereas, doesn't mean, if you just go sit in the stands for 3 hours, it's okay to get pissed drunk. But then, well, if you're sitting in your car,
they do cut out sales after the seventh inning. And
not in this game. They're going to be drinking up through the night. Hopefully it's a blowout. Tickets are $75. So, you get a car full of folks, split the cost. I guess it's not too bad. I guess parking normally like $50 anyway. So,
right,
in that sense, that would be pretty cool. Let's just get into it. All right. That brings us to this week's
Ignoble Award of the Week.
The Ignoble Award, yes, we had a couple of candidates, as we seem to have every week. But this week, I think it was kind of nice to be able to choose an Ignoble Award that actually happened because of baseball on the field, rather than any sort of off-field behavior, which we had some pretty incredibly tragic and horrific goings on.
Yeah, we're always talking about death. Or at least we've been doing that a little too much. I hope what you got for me this week does not involve murder or DUIs or...
No murder, no DUIs. Maybe murder, depending on your definition of how badly a team gets beat.
Suicide? Self-flagellation?
No. Just a misplaced 99 mile an hour fastball, I think, is what it comes to. No, our Ignoble Award this week is going to go to none other than Aroldis Chapman.
Oof.
From the New York Yankees. This guy has had a rough calendar year. I don't feel too bad for him because he is being paid quite a bit of money to play baseball for the New York Yankees. But he has become the only pitcher in postseason history to give up home runs or a go-ahead home run in the eighth inning or later multiple times. Yeah. So, and on top of that, in one calendar year, going back to, I guess it was game six of the AL championship season, or championship series last year. And, you know, he's given up four home runs. It's pretty good until you realize that two of the four home runs actually ended the Yankees season.
Now, you know, I'm going to, against my better judgment, I am going to give Chapman a bit of a pass from last year, because obviously Altuve knew it was coming, but, but you're right. After doing it twice, you would think he would learn maybe from the first one, and he did leave a tater like right over the plate there.
It was there. And I was interested. I was watching the MLB Network last night while I was writing down my notes and everything for this show, and there was a breakdown of that at bat and showing
which one
the
more recent.
The more recent one, the one that happened the other night against the Rays. And they showing the catcher, you know, showing the target all the way up until Chapman comes through on his windup to where he's almost at his release point. And the catcher then drops the glove, so there is no actual target that Chapman is looking at as he comes through and delivers the ball.
Is that by design, or are you saying this is an error?
I don't know if it was by design or an error. This was just one of the things that was pointed out by the analyst. I forget who it was.
Dan Plesac or somebody.
Half paying attention. But it was just noted that as he came forward to the top of this rotation to his release point, there was no target that he was looking at. The glove wasn't up. It was down. So when you need that control and you need that fastball to be in a particular spot, it's helpful to have that target. Where do you want me to throw this ball? Instead of throwing it in there, maybe missing in, you know, that history is made. You know, as Ted Williams said, history is made from the middle in. So if you're going to throw a fastball in, you better be sure of exactly where it's going to be, because if you miss, that ball's going a long
especially
way.
Especially nowadays with guys turn and burn.
And the emphasis on the launch angle and all of that. And I'm just going to pull the lights out.
Is Sanchez catching Chapman, or was that Higashioka?
No, it was Sanchez.
Because Higashioka started that game, I believe, because he's Cole's pitcher. I mean, he's Cole's catcher.
It was Sanchez.
So Sanchez came in that game maybe to pinch hit or something. Yeah. Or no, perhaps, I don't even think, he had no at-bats in that game.
He probably just came in to catch Chapman, and so he was interesting. He was dropping the his glove. I don't know if that had anything to do with it or not. But
Gary Sanchez just gets worse and worse every year in terms of catching it. Like now, like he can't even stay on for catching abilities, even when his bat is nothing. The Yankees are going to have a hard time in front of them thinking about what they're going to do with Gary Sanchez.
Right. If they're going to have a solution for a catcher coming up, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess you can blame it on the catcher, but Chapman.
I wouldn't imply to blame it on the catcher, but it was just a note, something I found interesting watching the analysis. You know, like I said last night.
So, yeah, I thought the Yankees might have had a chance, seeing as how they were wearing the Whitey Ford patch on their sleeve that day.
Whitey Ford, yes, rest in peace, Whitey Ford, and also another. Legend earlier in the week as well from Whitey Ford. It was Bob Gibson.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whitey Ford, you have, I mean,
he's the greatest Yankees pitcher of all time.
I mean, talking about elite pitching throughout the history of baseball, and Whitey Ford's name is right up there. I remember him most. He was manager of the Cardinals for a lot of years in the 80s.
I don't remember that. That's pretty cool.
But
I mean, the guy is, I don't think any other Yankees pitcher will ever hit 300 wins, right? Do you? I mean, perhaps.
I don't know. I'd have to look that up here too.
Well, I don't think. I mean, it just seems like nowadays nobody.
Well, no one's. I mean, we've well established that the era of 300 win pitchers is gone.
Yeah, or even 39 game, you know, 39 starts or 37 right. starts, you know.
Yeah, 30 is looking pretty iffy at this point.
Yeah, 32 is like, wow, this guy's an Iron Man. Oh, yeah. He led the league in game starts a couple of times. Of course, Whitey Ford, that is. He's got a career ERA of 2.75, man, which is pretty solid. Of course, his strikeouts, you know, he wasn't like a strikeout master, but he was more like a Tom Seaver, I guess, or Greg Maddux, just a very efficient pitcher.
And he was playing on some pretty spectacular Yankees teams as well. I mean,
oh yeah, I mean, what did they win? Six World Series titles and 11 pennants in 16 seasons. Yeah, it's pretty good. A career record of two. Oh, I thought he had 300. Oh, I'm sorry, 236 wins to 106 losses. Setting the Yankees record for victories, and his career winning percentage of .690 is the best of any pitcher with at least 300 career decisions. He was also the Cy Young Award winner in 1961 when he went 25-4, was 10-time All-Star. Pretty solid.
It is. Well, that's why he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so the Yankees couldn't do it even for him. So I don't know what they're gonna do. That's another year now.
Yeah,
where they've got nothing. You know, really nothing to show for it. You know, not even pennants, which is kind of sad. Right. Now, obviously, the Astros might have stolen one of those, and
might have,
or maybe two of them, I guess.
We'll, and I know that probably the league is disappointed that they don't get a Dodgers Yankees World Series.
That was all my predictions are basically wrong now. That was, I did think that somehow their bats were just gonna overwhelm the Rays pitching. It shows how much I know. Yeah. And I mean, they made it a series. It wasn't like the Rays blew them out by any means, you know.
Right.
The Yankees definitely.
Oh no, they're a tough team. I mean, with Judge and Stanton. Stanton
looks great.
Yeah,
postseason. Oh yeah, Stan's dirty.
And Judge could have had he had a couple of monster shots, but he could have had a better series.
I forget all of my predictions, but I'm pretty sure they're all wrong. Now, some of them were I was rooting for certain teams. Like I wanted to see the Reds make it a little bit further. Right. You know, I wanted to see the A's make it further. But yeah, so far my only real prediction is the Dodgers.
Same. Yeah, same. Same. as far as playoffs, I think we have a couple good series to look forward to. The internet seems to be aflame this morning about the end of Moneyball. Is this possibly true?
Oh, Billy.
Yeah, what's going on with Billy Beane? He wants to get a piece of the Red Sox. He already has a piece of the A's. He's executive vice president of the Oakland A's.
18 years after the Red Sox offered him the GM job, Billy Beane, that is, and he declined to stay with the A's for some sort of equity stake, I believe, in the team. It appears as if, yeah, is he coming back? Is he going somewhere he was supposed to maybe have been fated to? And or it is fun to think about what the Red Sox would have or wouldn't have done if he had stayed there. But yeah,
well, if he
there's some
gone,
weird rumors going around right now.
Yeah. So do you, what do you know about what's happening? Some sort
the
of
Red Ball, the company that Billy Beane is a co-chair for, is reportedly close to merging with John Henry, I believe, right? And his Fenway Sports Group, FSG. the deal that would land a special purpose acquisition company with less than 25% of FSG, which is being valued at about $8 billion. Now, obviously, Bean's equity in the A's renders this some sort of conflict of interest, or at the very least, an ethical dilemma. Of course, MLB is, I'm sure, aware of this. But you were saying that perhaps, you know, because FSG is also owns the Liverpool Football Club or something.
Yeah.
That, you know, maybe that's what he's doing it for. But Red Ball is reportedly in the process of raising $1 billion to help complete the deal, which could be done by the end of the month. Now, this is just sort of coming out today because I haven't heard anything about this.
Yeah, no,
today.
this is kind of a surprise to me, too. But
really interesting. So, well, yeah, is he not going to, I mean, I don't know. Is he going to leave the A's to go with the Red Sox? Or is this sort of like, you know, he feels like it's his prerogative to invest his own money wherever he wants? I mean, obviously, an owner of a team can't own two teams. Right. That wouldn't work. But this isn't really him being an owner. Right. Would he be a passive investor?
Is he considered to be an owner of the A's? He has an equity stake, but does that mean that he partly owns it, or he's just getting his pay is based on how well the team does? I mean, I don't know what the structure, or the details, or
he is the GM though, right? I mean, that's still
he's the vice president of operations,
vice president of baseball operations. Yeah,
he's no longer the general manager, but he is certainly an employee of the Oakland Athletics. Not necessarily that ownership status. So if he owns a company that is also part of a competing franchise,
Or what if they both meet up in the postseason? Yeah.
Right. Does he have a special hat made up that's half A's, half Red Sox, and sits up in an owner's box? I don't know.
Yeah. You know, well, somebody was sort of making the analogy of, you know, is Bill Gates not allowed to buy stock in Apple kind of thing? You know, it's just the market, and, you know, maybe it looks bad, but maybe it's not necessarily a conflict of interest. I don't know. It obviously, I mean, in terms of a sports setting, I guess you could say the technology sector or any two companies are rivals, are competing at all times, and they want to get their share of the market. So I guess it does kind of make sense. Like, you're not going to prohibit Bill Gates from doing something like that.
Well,
right?
No, but there's also stories of, you know, people, you know, stealing the secret formula for Coca-Cola, going to Pepsi and say, hey, you want this?
Yeah.
And Pepsi saying no. And then, you know, basically reporting them. It's like, no, we want to beat Coca-Cola because we're better than them, rather than because we stole their formula and can mimic now what makes Coke so great.
Well, they're about to lose their New York market now, Pepsi, that is. So,
it seems so.
And I actually have the recipe for Coca-Cola right here in this Big Secrets by William Poundstone. It's got the entire formula in here. If you want it.
Okay.
It's a great old book, by the way.
I'll take a look at that. Does that have the cocaine, or is that after the cocaine?
No, okay. Yeah, of course there's cocaine. It's like trace amounts, you know. Hence coca, you know.
Well, I mean, sugar is 9 times more addictive than cocaine.
Well, but caffeine is the most addictive substance on earth, right?
So, yeah, it's got both sugar and caffeine. No longer the third one, unfortunately. Fortunately, I don't know.
Why are we all obese? I don't know. Moving on. Maybe you should have given that the ignoble award.
Maybe it will one of these days during the off season.
It's not a tumor.
keep your eyes peeled on this story. Billy Bean, we don't know what he's doing. This guy's always doing some crazy stuff. So, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Now, we're just going to get it right into trivia. We're going to wrap it up a little early today, unless you want to give me something else.
I don't have anything else. I don't think so.
One quick addition, though, as we see the NFL just postponing game after game because of COVID, MLB says there are no new positive coronavirus tests among players for 40 days. So, well, MLB is doing something right.
Well, I think the bubble is working.
Yeah, they extended their streak of consecutive days with no COVID-19 tests to 40 days.
And it took a while for them to figure out how to truly get a
cross the point of it's important to follow these protocols.
Right.
I think that the NFL had the opportunity to learn from baseball. It's like, hey, you got to take this serious, and you've got to enforce the rules, not just some sort of cosmetic, hey, you're not wearing your mask on the field, head coach.
Or suggestions.
You get fined $100,000. No, it's in between the games. What are these players doing? They need to be careful. And then a star quarterback gets the virus and misses the game, and now it's apparently going through his team, and it's like the NFL could have avoided this completely by taking the lessons that baseball went through at the beginning of the season with the Marlins and the Cardinals and that whole mess and all of those missed games that were unnecessary, but they corrected it, and obviously they're now doing something right. It just makes the National Football League look very hypocritical about what they're really serious about. If they really want to have quality football played on the field, they've got to keep the players safe. They've got to keep them in line somehow. So maybe they'll have another meeting between the NFL players and the league to have these strict protocols and have them enforced the way that baseball really managed to do down the last month of the season and now the bubble of a postseason.
Yeah, it seems like it's way worse for fantasy football players than it was for fantasy baseball, because luckily it was just the Marlins and St. Louis. But, I mean, it still wasn't fun for baseball, obviously.
No, it wasn't fun. It was difficult. The Marlins themselves did, 160-some-odd roster transactions just to be able to manage all of the COVID restriction, player restrictions, and I imagine there were some fantasy owners that had to do some juggling, especially with the head-to-head leagues.
Yeah, myself included.
And, I can't imagine if you had Cam Newton on your fantasy team and then he gets COVID and he's out for a couple of weeks.
Or anybody from New England or, their opponent or anything like that.
Well, sure. And then he comes back and then, his wide receivers are out. So now, he doesn't do as well when he does come back because he doesn't have the players that he usually does around him. It's all messed up.
Well, you know what? Luckily, I don't care about football. So,
yeah,
baseball is wrapping up, and they're doing great. There were no positive tests among 8,096 samples collected this week. Now, that brings us to last week's trivia question. Uh-oh. Okay. Now, there is a bit of, I don't know if it's controversy. I don't think I phrased it correctly entirely last time, but
really, well, remind us what you said and what you meant to say.
Okay, last week's trivia question: who had the lowest ERA over a 12 game stretch and or 60 innings pitched? Now, I don't think I added the 60 innings minimum or caveat, because nowadays guys aren't pitching complete games every game like they used to, So,
right.
12 games or 60 innings, which is
12 games or 60 innings.
Yeah. Now, okay. We got Patricia in Kansas City, Missouri says, oh, Kansas City, that's pretty cool. Zach Greinke. Now, Zach Greinke did have a couple stretches in his career where he was basically unhittable. I guess the best of which came in a 60-inning stretch in 09 between April 8th and May 15th, where he threw 60 innings with only 4 earned runs, giving him a ERA of .60, which was pretty stellar. Yeah. That is not the answer, though. We got Neil in Petaluma says, not sure how anyone could beat Jake Arrieta's second half in 2015. Yeah, I would wholeheartedly agree, as I actually had him on my fantasy team that year, and he quite single-handedly won me my championship, among other stellar coaching decisions, of course. Arrieta's second half is basically one of the greatest pitching stretches of all time, where he allowed only 4 earned runs, just one home run across 88 and a third innings, winning 11 straight decisions, including a 12-strikeout no-hitter against the Dodgers, no less, which I remember. It was like one of the weirdest things watching that game. I was like, yeah, oh, ah, oh, you know, it's yeah. like rooting for him, rooting against him. And he had an ERA of 0.41.
Wow, that's an impressive stretch.
How? That's not the lowest.
Really?
We got Antonio in L.A. says, it's either the GOAT, Sandy Koufax, nice, or my man Fernando, and there's like seven or eight O's. Well, actually, ding, ding, ding. Yeah, because between opening day of the 81 season to May 8th, Fernando Valenzuela, yeah, went 63 innings with only two earned runs.
Wow.
Giving him an ERA of 0.29.
Put his jersey up on the wall.
Man. I know. I have a friend, a very good friend from Mexico who is a Giants fan because he lives here, but he told me, the day the Dodgers retire Fernando Valenzuela's jersey, he's going to be a Dodger fan. And I'm sure he's not the only one. So just
maybe not.
I know his career numbers, you know, weren't, you know, his first half was amazing and, you know, he petered out a bit. But just the fact that he brought baseball to an entire population of people in California and L.A., a group of people which were still burned and upset from, you know, the building of Chavez Ravine to begin with. He really did suture that wound. I mean, I don't know 100%. Obviously, I wasn't alive in 57 or 58, but it seemed to do more for that team than any other single player that I could think of. Really, I mean, besides Jackie Robinson, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, he was. I mean, I remember I was young when Fernando was pitching, but I remember watching him pitch at the stick and at Dodger Stadium on TV. I remember watching him pitch and just knowing that he was one of the really good ones.
You were witnessing greatness.
I was definitely witnessing greatness, and I feel privileged that I got to see him pitch live on a number of occasions. And, you know, I mean, you cannot forget just that, you know, his kind of lazy low leg kick and then the look up to the heavens and then fires it in, usually for a strike.
Right. His arm going the wrong way for a screwball.
He was a fun one to watch, no doubt about it.
Now, there is a slight discrepancy with this answer as I was researching. As Matt Kelly of MLB, in an article he wrote, also has Lefty Grove. Tied,
Lefty Grove.
Yeah, tied with Valenzuela with a stretch between April 14th to May 18th, 1936 with a 0.29 ERA. Mm-hmm. However,
the name like Lefty had to have been in the 30s.
Well, yeah, 1936, I believe, actually, yeah. But, you know, okay, so when I did the research, when I looked at Lefty Grove's stats on Baseball Reference, it has his first game of that season being April 17th, not April 14th. And when I ran the numbers up until May 18th, it gives him an ERA of 0.83, giving up six runs in 65.1 innings, which obviously is great, but not 0.29.
Right.
So I'm not sure if somehow Baseball Reference is missing his first start or what, or, you know, I don't know what's going on there. There's a discrepancy, and I couldn't, because if Baseball Reference doesn't have it, I feel like that's sort of the Bible, and maybe they're wrong, but if they're wrong, I feel like they'd be wrong with some obscure player, not a guy with a career WAR of 106.7 like Lefty Grove.
Right.
I mean, the guy was a beast. So it's really weird. Again, on that article, it starts April 14th, and maybe there's some lost start that did lower his ERA. But from what I could see, it's all Fernando all the time. You know, the internet giveth, the internet taketh away.
Yeah.
So, I screwed it up. I don't know what's happening this week. Everybody's a winner.
All right.
Screw it.
I like it. Everyone's a winner. Everyone gets a trophy.
Remember to leave your answer at Twitter at West Coast Bias.
Your answer?
You need to ask the new question.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. What do you got for me this week?
I believe that you had it this week. again, we're keeping with the 60 themes. I'll have a World Series themed question our next episode.
All right, so the 60. All right, well, I'm running out of 60 games,
and running out of seasons, so it's okay.
And I've already kind of screwed up the last one, and you know, if there are some better internet sleuths out there than me, I'm not very good at this stuff. I barely know how to use Reddit. Do a little research. Let us know what's going on with Lefty Grove and Fernando. Okay, this week's trivia question: who had the best team record in the first 60 games of a season? That's it. Short and sweet. This one I can't mess up, I swear. Although, I don't know.
All right, well, then read it one more time.
Who had the best team record? Which team had the best record to start the first 60 games?
The first 60 games.
The first 60 games, not any 60 games.
The best record to start a season, the first 60 games.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. That's a good question.
All right.
Now you can email your
baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com at West Coast Bias BB. We're getting out of here from San Francisco, California. I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest are just details.
Go watch some baseball.